Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The Bucks won a f***ing NBA championship.
Yeah!
What? What?
He tries to take a pulse fake.
Watching that basketball game, like, caused health problems for me.
Boogie hates racism and Chris Paul. And who cannot get on board with that platform?
If I've learned a lot, I'm not going to say it. That sounds too
bad.
The
Bucks do win it all. Pat Connaughton's numbers should be in the rafters. Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, proudly a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network and the Eurostep Podcast Network. I am Ty Windisch. I am joined, as always, by my, I don't know what the adjective is for soon to get a haircut, my excited co-host, Rohan Kadi. Rohan, how's it going?
I'm doing really well. I'm happy that we're here for this episode. And before we get started, real quick, if you're listening to this today, the day it comes out, we are hosting a playback room for the Memphis Grizzlies game tonight. If you want to get a link to that, make sure you get into our Discord, leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify, tweet it at me or Ty, or proof of subscription to our Substack. But just wanted to get that in there. Ty, we have a guest.
We do. We have a special guest. We're very excited. We are joined today by Matt Velazquez, former Milwaukee Bucks beat writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, current Bleacher Report quality editor. If you have been a Bucks fan for more than like a year, I'm sure you're more familiar with him than us, so the intro probably not that necessary. But Matt, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with us on the Eurostep.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be talking to Bucks with you guys. And yeah, I'm excited to see wherever the conversation takes us.
Absolutely. First off, I just think we need to ask, how's Indy? How's Bleacher Report? And how have you been? Trying to speak for Bucks Twitter is dangerous and foolhardy, as I'm sure you know. But I think it's safe to say the majority of folks who follow the team hope that you're doing well despite missing your Bucks coverage.
I hope people hope I'm doing well. I hope after all those years of covering the Bucks, people aren't wishing ill upon me. But no, things are good. You know, life is good. You know, living here in Indy is pretty chill. You know, I work from home, have a really good job with Bleacher Report. We're get to be a lot more flexible, be home a lot more than when I was traveling covering the Bucks. It's good for, you know, good for me, good for my family, which is great. Found a good basketball run through some of my wife's friends at medical school, so I got to play some hoops on a pretty regular basis, which is good. Just as of yesterday, started coaching my daughter's basketball team, so we'll have them running horns and floppy and all the different things as soon as we can. So I did find out last night that out of the 9 girls who were there, 8 of them have never played basketball before. So you know, we're starting right from square one, and you know, we'll achieve greatness at some point. So I mean, that's kind of what's going on with me. Really, really kind of chill, you know, kind of lifestyle, very different than before. I still keep a loose grip on what's going on with the Bucks and Bucks Twitter. I'm a lurker now. I don't post as much, but I see what's going on. I see the general storylines and trends, you know, and I pop in every now and then with just ideas and tweets and snark, you know. So I'm out there. I see you all.
This is a little bit of an aside. One of my dreams, just I want to do this once in my life, is just like coach like a middle school basketball team or something and I know you were joking, like you're going to have them running horns and stuff. I want to actually do that. Like, I want to have the most well-coached basketball team of all time. That's like the youngest. I don't think that's actually going to happen, but I'm going to try to do that someday. But you said that you're a lurker now, but you still keep up, obviously, like you said, with Buck stuff. And you had a Twitter thread recently actually about like you have more free time and like a little bit more of a freer approach to, you know, taking in the Milwaukee Bucks. I know you talked about this a little bit before, but like, what was it like to see the Bucks win a title when you're just sort of watching from afar? Like, how was that experience? Were you just like super, super locked into every game? Like you were like a casual fan? Did like, was all the relationships you had cultivated sort of make it mean more? How was that experience for you?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I gotta give a shout out to a guy. I don't know if I should name him by name in case he would get in trouble for this, but a guy I went to college with when he found out I was leaving the Journal Sentinel and kind of moving on and doing something different. He actually, at the time, I don't think he works there anymore, but he worked for like NBA League Pass International. And he hooked me up with an international league pass.
It's the best league pass. It's the best league. It's so good.
So I could watch literally everything, no blackouts. Like, it was insane. So I had that hookup. So I was able to watch all through the playoffs. I didn't catch really any of the Heat series because, I mean, it was over really fast. But then I watched a little bit of the start of the Nets series. I was like, well, enough of that. And then I kind of skipped out on a few games because I'm not actually a fan. Like, I'm not like a, you know, a ride or die. I'm not going to pretend I am. You know, we know who the real ones are.
Yeah.
And so I skipped out for a few games. I'm like, oh, you know, they're making this a thing now. Okay. Well, I guess I'll watch like games like 5, 6, and 7. And that was really fun. Those games as basketball games were good basketball games. You know, then I kind of like kept up with the Hawks series. I don't know what was going on in my life, but I feel like I was like, it was appointment viewing, but it wasn't like a hard appointment. It was like, oh, if I have something else, okay, that's fine. But then the finals, that was appointment viewing. And my older daughter, particularly, you know, she's 8 now. She was kind of getting into it. She's like, oh, we want to watch, you know, Giannis. We want to watch the Bucks, you know, because I had gone to a game here in Indy back in May, and my kids were convinced that like going to an NBA game means you're going to be on the big screen like 3 times. Because there was only 25% capacity. So two girls jumping around got on the screen like 3 times. And so it was the best for them. And then after the game, you know, Bucks PR guy, you know, extraordinaire, Dan Smicheki, he grabbed Giannis and pointed out where we were. And, you know, he waved. It was very nice. And so the girls, they basically think Giannis and I are best friends, which couldn't be further from the truth. You know, like, oh, we want to see what they're doing and Giannis or whatever. And I remember around that time I had traveled to Baltimore to hang out with my brother and his family. We were watching you know, I think it was game 5 together. I don't know, it must have been earlier than that. Either way, there were so many like incredible. It must have been game 2. It was game 2. I don't know, they're all running together. There was just, I'm thinking about all the highlights that I saw, right, and like experiencing them like with my family, and like that was really cool. And then seeing them win, and I mean, the biggest thing was like I felt like I was allowed to feel happy for them, like, because when you are in it and you're covering them, you're supposed to be like kind of, you know, unbiased and stand back and be like, okay, like this is what happened. Like, let's, you know, I have to focus on what I need to do. I need to like flag down these people, like do interviews, transcribe, write a story, make sure it's good because a lot of people are gonna read it. Like, this is like a huge moment. But as someone who was just sitting on their couch like watching everything unfold, I could just be happy for, you know, the players, the coaches, the organization, you know, the reporters, you know, the people who work for the team or work with the team, and just be like, wow, like there's a lot of people who have done a lot of work for a very long time to make this make this all happen. And you can kind of just sit back and be like, wow, like great for them. Like, it's like really exciting. And to see all the people in Milwaukee, and just like, you know, when I first got to Milwaukee, it was 2013. Like, they're still playing the Bradley Center. There was, you know, downtown wasn't what it is now. You couldn't really find Bucks stuff anywhere. Like, I was mostly like given the assignment to go help Charles Gardner covering games because no one wanted to do it because they weren't very good. Like, I mean, yeah. The Bradley Center was right across the street from the Journal Sentinel office. And it was just like, meh, like whatever. And like just to see the progression of where they were to where they got to and see all the people in the Deer District and all that, like it's just like absolutely cool, objectively cool. And so like just watching it from afar, it's like, wow, like I that was my life once. Like I would have been there. But I did have the benefit of like I was glad I wasn't there in a sense, because if I was there, I'd just be frenzied. Things would be chaotic and my life would have been, I feel like, in shambles by the end. I don't know how people covered that team at all, just because like you're working constantly for like 10 months and it's like you have to be at peak performance like that whole playoffs. It's insane. But I was just able to like watch and like, wow, like this is cool. And it was just fun for me.
A question I've asked people since they won it all: do you think there were more people in Fiserv and the Deer District combined for game six than there were Bucks fans in like 2013? Because I think it's got to be at least close. Like total people who are really, really paying attention and cheering for the team. I think there might have been more in person that night.
No, in 2013, it was mostly just like, I mean, it was underground. Like yeah. It was almost like a hipster thing to do. It's like, oh, I like the Bucks. It's like, oh, like is that a band? Like is that something I haven't heard about before? Like it wasn't what it is now. Like there wasn't an international contingent of Bucks fans, or at least not ones that you would hear about. Like you didn't have like legions of Greek fans and that, and you know, a bunch of like, you know, outposts of Australian fans, and you know, I when they played in Paris, I talked to a bunch of French fans. Like even if they were there at the time, like it was just a really small subset. So I think it's possible there were more, you know, it also just became cool to be a Bucks fan. But as is the case with most hipster things, eventually it either fades away or it becomes really cool to like kind of follow along. Gosh, that is a really good question. But I think the number of people at the finals was probably more.
Speaking of those, like those awful 2013-14 days, like you said, that's when you were starting on the Bucks beat. How wild does it seem to see like two guys like Giannis and Chris? Like, I know obviously most people aren't going to expect like, oh yeah, those are going to be the best two players on a title team. Obviously, how could you not see that? But like, is there like some glimpse you might have gotten from those early days? It's like, oh, these two might have a chance.
Not that first year, no. Yeah. I think if you're imagining back to that year and saying, yeah, you know, I saw that there was going to be something for both of those guys and they were going to be great and just doing insane things in the playoffs, like, you're a liar. Like, I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, Giannis was just this kind of like goofy, gangly kid. And he, you know, true to form of being somebody who is coming from a different country and being away from his family and his culture and his background for the first time ever, like he was just figuring out who he was and what he was doing. And you could tell he had some like basketball skill, obviously, like, but you didn't look at him and go, oh yeah, this goofy teen is going to be, you know, the best player in the league, putting up 50 points in a deciding finals game in the next decade. Like you just didn't, I mean, maybe John Hammond saw it, like, but I don't think most people saw that. You know, what you saw was somebody who like was trying smoothies for the first time, and a guy who, you know, would see something funny on his phone and like show it to all the guys in the locker room to the point where they were just annoyed with him because you know, they were a bad team. And so after a loss, to have this, like, you know, this child basically coming around the locker room showing you a funny Instagram thing that is not funny to you because you're an adult man and like you just don't care. Like that's like, you know, that's what it was. Like that's stuff that was going on. Like, and you'd see like the fire of him, like, you know, going kind of head to head against Carmelo Anthony and kind of just trying different things out and like learning about who he was kind of as a player. Like you saw the progression, but you also just kind of saw the immaturity. And you know, he wasn't, you know, as physically developed yet. And you never know if someone is going to physically develop or not. And so that was Giannis. And then Chris just kind of like, you know, quiet, doing his thing, hanging out, not making waves, you know, starting, but still kind of like super low key. And that's Chris. Like, he's going to kind of fade kind of into the background. He's not trying to draw attention to himself, but he's going to be like efficient and solid and good. And at that time, you're like, oh, well, maybe he could be like a solid like role player. Like maybe that'll be him. Like who knows how they'll build? Like they'll get a high pick. They'll get a star. Like that star will come in and, you know, it'll shake everything up. And like, so you just don't know at that point, you know, what is going to kind of blossom from those guys. I mean, it's a weird team to cover. It wasn't a very good team by any stretch of the imagination. Yeah, there are a lot of characters. You know, when you have a bad team like that, you just get a bunch of guys like cycling. I mean, maybe, you know, people are more used to that now with the way the hardship things are going and you're getting more. But at that time, like, there were like 20 guys on the team, like, because they just kept like dropping guys and picking new guys up on 10 days. And then there's a stretch where like fans were like, yo, Jeff Adrian, like, that's our guy.
I was in on Jeff Adrian. The rebound. I know. Jeff Adrian could rebound, man.
Yeah, he definitely could. And like, you know, and it's like, okay, like Jeff Adrian, like he's good. All right. What's going on with Larry Sanders? No one knows. Like, OJ Mayo, like, whatever. Like, sometimes he's cool. Sometimes he's not. Sometimes he's sick. What was that, a flu that he had for like 3 weeks? Like, what's going on? You know? Yeah, exactly.
No, he broke his ankle falling down the stairs, obviously.
Exactly. So at the time, you're just like, and you're also doing it inside this bubble of like, I don't know if anyone cares. like there's the backdrop of the team getting sold and like the kind of like Save Our Bucks movement, and you're going to games and it's sad. It's like mostly empty, and you're like, you know, you're hoping that maybe people will be there because a good team is in town, but then it's just like all Cavs fans or all Bulls fans or all Lakers fans or whatever, and it's just like, yeah, this is rough. Like this is covering the NBA. Whew. Like, you know, and I was just coming off of the year before I had an internship with the Pacers, and I had gone to all the Pacers games or a lot of the Pacers home games. And that was the year, you know, that they had gone to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time. So like, that was my first foray into like being around the NBA on a regular basis. And I was like, wow, like this is cool. Like this is high level NBA stuff. And then the next year I'm helping Charles cover the Bucks. And it's like, oh, this is a very different situation in a very different city. But then, of course, you know, the team gets sold, the coach gets changed, everybody develops, Pfizer form gets built, and boom, championship. It's pretty straightforward.
I think my favorite thing about, like, what – maybe my favorite thing people forget about the Bucks, people who weren't, you know, paying attention in 2014, is, like, there was a – I don't want to say a long time, but at least a year or two, maybe even more, where – Giannis was supposed to be the number two guy to like Jabari Parker, right? And I remember our evolving comps for Giannis, and totally agree with you saying most sane people did not see this from Giannis. Year one, we were like, maybe he can be Nick Batum someday, like Portland Nick Batum. Like maybe he could have a 5x5 game. That would be awesome. And then year or two later, you know, maybe Scottie Pippen. Can we say Scottie Pippen out loud? And now it's like he's on Jordan level. It's so wild to see. But I wanted to ask if you have a favorite story or like moment or memory from your time on the beat. I assume Giannis may be involved, but you never know. As you said, there were a lot of characters throughout that whole time. And I'm sure a lot of moments that when the team was maybe less buttoned up than now that were probably pretty fun to be around for.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, I feel like it all kind of blurs together a little bit.
Yeah.
I just think of, personally, I really enjoyed, their kind of first deep playoff run when they ended up losing to the Raptors. Like that was just, it was just fun to cover the playoffs and actually like stick around for a while and like to get to go on the road for like meaningful games. And like, as an individual, like I had a ton of fun, like, you know, you're going out to Boston and it's like Patriots Day and it's crazy. And you're kind of navigating that, you know, and you're kind of dealing with that whole, I know that was the year before, but like, so you have the Pistons series, you know, then you have the Celtics series and you're kind of shuttling back and forth and you're getting kind of stay in a place for a little while. Cause like, that's like one of the interesting things about the playoffs is you have two games in the same city in a row. And so you stay in that place for like 5 days. So you get to go out and go to restaurants and like hang out, and just kind of like feel settled. which is nice in the NBA season. When you're covering a team, you rarely get to feel settled, especially when it comes to being on the road. Usually you're in a city and then you're constantly moving to the next place. And so that I enjoyed that time. I think in terms of kind of behind the scenes stuff, like I remember my first season covering the team full time. And I didn't know how to book my travel in terms of, like, you know, if a team has a trip, are they going to stay away or are they going to go home? And like, they had a new coach, obviously. So like, you can't go off the previous year, like, oh, in past years, they've gone here and then gone home before the next road game, or they've stayed out for the whole trip. And so I didn't know how to plan that. So I remember early in the season, they had a trip where they're going to Cleveland and then staying. Then they had 2 days off and then they're going to San Antonio. And so I had planned to go home after Cleveland because I was like, oh, 2 days off. Cleveland's really close. They'll just go back to Milwaukee. And while I'm in Cleveland, I'm walking to the arena and I get a text from my brother-in-law and he goes, hey, so like, that's pretty big, Bledsoe. And I was like, what? and literally, like, my phone had been in my pocket. It was cold. It was like November. And I'm like walking to the arena for shoot around and I'm like, oh no, like, this is bad. And so like, I'm like immediately trying to figure out what's going on. And I see like Greg Monroe walk out of practice with John Horst. And I'm like, well, that's all the confirmation I really need. You know, and I'm so trying to sort that out. And he eventually, I get a chance to, you know, approach Moose and be like, hey, you know, can we talk? He's like, I got a lot going on. I don't want to talk right now. And I was like, fair enough. Yeah. Like that's real. And so like that whole day was just like, grinding, like getting, I eventually got John Horst like on the record, like during pregame, got to talk for a while. But like I missed dinner and the game, I don't even know what happened. It really doesn't matter. Yeah. But after the game, I'm like famished and I had never been to Cleveland before. And so I'm like walking back to my hotel. I'm like, well, there's gotta be something between the arena and there wasn't. So I stopped in the gas station next to my hotel and got a Budweiser tall boy and like a bag of M&Ms. And I went and I had more work to do. So I go back to my room. And at this point, like I had found out that the Bucks were going straight to San Antonio, even though they had 2 off days.
That's so Jason Kidd. That's extremely Jason Kidd.
So they're going straight to San Antonio and now the Bledsoe's going to meet them there. I have to go to San Antonio. So I have to rebook my flights and everything. I have to finish up a story that night. And the only flight to get me there potentially for practice the next day is a 6 a.m. flight. So I barely sleep, get to the airport, go to Nashville, go from Nashville to San Antonio, somehow get to where I need to go. I'm at practice. And at one point, I think, you know, I was kind of standing around waiting to talk to somebody. Like Giannis, like a ball came over to me and I threw it. And Giannis says, oh, hey, hit me up. And so I pass over to him to the corner and he misses a three. And then they're just like kind of shooting around. And I was like, oh, Giannis, where's my assist? He's like, hey, F you, man. And I was like, hey, I was really hoping you'd make that. And I was like, okay. But then I started talking to Deli and, you know, Deli was always one of my favorite guys to talk to because he felt like a normal person sometimes. Like we talk about board games and like random nonsense. Somehow we got into the conversation of like, oh man, like I'm like losing track of like everything is, oh yeah, we're at the point of the season. I think I said, I can't believe I'm here. I don't even know like where I am or like where I woke up. I've been in like 3 states today. He's like, yeah, we're at the point of the season where I don't really know like what day it is. I just know like when the next game is. He goes, but I don't know how you guys do it. Like the whole like flying commercial, like this is hard for us. Like, I don't know how you guys do it. And like to this day, like, I don't know if I've been more seen by like a player. I was like, oh, like I totally get that. And then of course, like Jason Kidd ran like 4-hour practices. Like they weren't quite that long, but they were close for like the next 2 days and like, you know, talked to Bledsoe and did all that. And, but it was like that whole thing was like a welcome to the beat type of situation. I also remember there was a time in Miami where I was wearing a Marvel shirt and Captain Marvel had just come out and I was talking to Brooke Lopez about the Avengers video game for Sega. which was a classic. And like Brooke and I are like the same age, so he totally remembered playing that. So we were chatting about it, and Giannis came over and like grabbed my shirt and was like, "You're not a real Marvel fan. You don't like Marvel. You're a real fan." And I was like, "Yes, I am. Like, what are you talking about?" And he goes, "You're not a real fan. You're not a real fan." And I'm like, "Hey, Giannis, have you seen Captain Marvel?" He goes, "No." And I'm like, "Well, you're not a real Marvel fan." Yeah, and then later that day, he and I talked and had a great conversation. It was fun. But it's stuff like that that you remember. I mentioned the playoffs. What was that, 2019? We're just reporting out Chris Middleton, you know, leaving after Detroit and like having his daughter and being there, like that whole story. It took a long time to find out what happened. Like that's why the story didn't come out till Father's Day, which is because he didn't want to talk about it. Like, yeah. And I get why, but just like the process of kind of like having those conversations and building that trust and like him allowing me to tell that story, just, you know, felt good as a reporter and as someone who had kind of built a relationship with him over time. So, and that's just some of the stuff that comes to mind. It's all kind of scattershot, but it was a fun time.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Since you mentioned John Horst walking out with someone, were you around for the practice when Jason Kidd got fired? Because that happened at a practice, right?
So I wasn't at that practice. I don't know if anyone. I don't know if it was an official practice.
I'm guessing. Yeah, he probably didn't do it in front of media and stuff.
Yeah,
not a very Bucks move.
It wasn't a. Well, he was not very media friendly.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys have heard and read about the just his general, some would say paranoia. Or just, you know, when he came in, he moved the media entrance from the front door of the Cousins Center to a back unmarked door that they had like put an awning over. But then then when they would let you in, you'd be at the top of like a staircase in like this like weird little annex. And then they'd let you down and practice was done. And it was just this whole like level of like secrecy that like was not normal. At least talking to Charles Gardner, who'd been covering the team for longer, like it was kind of more like a folksy like type setting where like, you know, oh, hey, there's like a trust and like an expectation that like, okay, there's this like kind of media room that they had that they would like let people wait in, but you have to walk past like all like the executive offices to get there. And the Cousins Center was a dump. Like in terms of, I mean, we all know that, I've heard that, But it was like this like little like kind of like small business, small town. Like, it's okay, everything's fine. And like Jason Kidd was like, no, that's not okay. Like, we have to put the media, like they're out to get you. Like we have to have them come through this back door. And it was this, you know, kind of this whole thing. So there's no way that if there was media present, that would be part of the calculus at all. I just remember that day was, I mean, that's again, that was my first season covering them full time. And it's like, gosh, like, you know, that they had hired John Horst during the summer before I was even officially on the beat. And I had to cover, like, I literally wrote a story, who is John Horst? Because no one knew who this guy was, which took a bunch of reporting while I was at the US Open at Erin Hills. I was helping cover that for the Journal Sentinel that weekend. And it was like, oh, you aren't officially on the beat yet, but you're probably going to be the beat guy. And you're the only guy we have. So figure out who this guy is. And like, I had to figure out how to get a hold of his like college basketball coach and like his like high school athletic director. And I eventually got his parents. And like, there was this whole thing while I'm covering the US Open, like writing like a story or two per day. So that was a mess. And then, so they hire him. And then like they fire Jason Kidd. Oh, they made the Bledsoe trade. They fire Jason Kidd. And I'm like, I'm new to this in the sense that like I had been like the number two guy helping Charles, but I don't have like the deep web of contacts and all that stuff to like get all the information immediately. So I'm just like flying around, trying my best to like do anything or get any information, you know. And it's just like it's very invasive and interruptive to like your life, where you're like, oh, like they just fired Jason Kidd, my whole day has changed. Yeah. Like, so yeah, so I was not there. I was not at any pizza places where his departure was discussed. I can say that I covered the whole Joe Prunty era, whatever that's worth. But that's all I got.
It's an iconic time, really, the Joe Prunty era, and still it's still continuing a bit in Atlanta.
Yeah, you know? No, I mean as Igor Kokoskov said, he's a guru. He's a basketball savant. So he will always have a home in the league, I'm sure. He's also a very nice guy. The problem is that sometimes he is very boring, because he is very nice and very straightforward, and he'll look you in the eye and he'll smile and he'll tell you nothing. And but I mean, I don't think I can say a bad word about him as a person. So there is that.
Right. That's always a good thing. You always want to talk with good people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We talked previously about like a bunch of characters that have happened all throughout your time covering the Bucks. Just so many players, so many different like personalities. If you had to pick one player, just who could be anyone from your time covering the Bucks, to be on the end of the bench for a potential title run, who would it be?
This is so easy. This is not even a question. It's Rashad Vaughn.
Oh yes.
Rashad Vaughn is just a great Bucks character. I think he was made to be at the end of a bench, keeping things light, keeping things fun, waving that towel, kind of just like hanging out. Like I don't know. I don't want to give away too much, but I feel like there could be a future in like just putting a GoPro on Rashad Vaughn. If he is like in an NBA arena, like at the end of a bench, like, you know, it could be super fun. I mean, he didn't work out as a player.
Oh, I thought you meant like he just never worked out, and I was like, I can see that too.
No. Yeah, I'm sure he worked really hard. That's what all the coaches said. Yeah, he worked really hard. He tried his best. Just didn't work in Milwaukee and didn't work in the NBA, and you know that happens. But I think he had a pretty fun time while he was there. And I can only imagine what those fun times actually looked like. I do recall there was one game. It was like, I think it was like ahead of Christmas. I'd have to look up the actual date, but they were playing in Charlotte and they lost. And it was kind of like a bummer game. And in the locker room afterwards, Rashad Vaughn is like, he's all kind of like, man, like I need to get like the new Xbox, like whatever. No one's gonna get me the new Xbox. Like, whatever. And he's like, he's like asking guys basically to get him an Xbox. And I think at one point he asked the guy, Giannis, like, you just had this big extension. Like, you got the money, like, hook me up. He's like, hey, that extension like doesn't start till next year. Like I don't have anything, you know. And he's got, and I think people are kind of getting annoyed with him.
Yeah,
like kind of. But then eventually, like John Henson's like, yo, didn't you just get one? He's like, yeah, but I need another one. Like, or he's like, I need one to have here. Or that's kind of like the general gist that I was getting. And Henson's like, yo, man, just like, it's cool. Just chill. I got you. Like, pull up on your phone. Like, we get to the bus. Just show it. I got you. It's whatever. It's like, I think that was basically his way of being like, okay, I can tell everybody's like kind of tense here. Like, I'm gonna put an end to this. And like, he was young. It might have been his rookie year or his second year. You know, but like, that's the kind of thing where like a vet can step up and kind of like have those conversations. So I don't know what happened. I have no idea what happened with the rest of that. But like, I'm just standing in the locker room, like looking around, waiting for guys to finish getting dressed so I can do interviews. And like, that's the stuff like you're overhearing. You're like, shoddy doing his thing, trying to get an Xbox. Like, you know, that's kind of what's going on. So he is a character, at least from what I saw in the locker room. I think he's a fun guy to kind of have just like around. If you're not expecting him to do anything on the court, I mean, I feel like a good second option might be DJ Wilson. DJ was so well liked in that locker room. Like everybody loved DJ. Like he worked hard, he played well. Like when he had a chance to play, he was always up on the bench, like waving the towel. I think everybody liked him, as far as I could tell. You know, and I don't recall anyone saying anything bad about him.
You're happy for his success in Toronto?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be happy for him to do well anywhere. I mean, I think that he, you know, he never, you know, rubbed me the wrong way. Never had any issues with him. I feel like an underrated pick for a guy to have at the end of the bench just because he always had this like big chip on his shoulders. Miroslav Radulica.
Oh my God! Yes,
it's a deep cut. He was always so upset and angry, but he had to like kind of choke it down. When you would call him a rookie, because he was 30.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, I've been playing basketball for a long time. but he also had like this like biker jacket and like had this kind of like alternate persona that like he was a really big deal like back home.
Yeah.
Like, and so like he's like you know, I think one of the things I remember was there was some interview and someone asked him like, well, like where are you going? What are you gonna do? He goes, oh, it's Saturday night, if you know what I mean. It's like it was something along those lines, and you're just like, okay, like I don't know if he'd be great for team chemistry at the end of the bench, but just as some like a random dude to just like talk to and be like, hey Miroslav, like whatever. And like he had a very strong confidence in himself that was entertaining.
That's I remember he was like one of the more crabbier personalities who made it into Mirren Fader's book about Giannis. I remember at some point she had a story in there about like Giannis just like annoyed the hell out of Miroslav, and he like snapped at one point and said, just shut up, man, like enough. And that totally clicks with the way you're describing him, is like, I'm not a rookie, like I'm established.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was saying before about Giannis being like 18,
yeah,
in this locker room of like men. You know, and like him, you know, doing his kind of like, you know, 18-year-old stuff and like whatever antics and, you know, kind of coming to America type stuff, like that didn't always resonate because these guys were like kind of like hardened, grizzled, established veterans who were playing, some of them, for their careers. And, you know, it just didn't always mesh with what was going on. So
absolutely.
My answer would be Brandon Knight, by the way.
Oh,
because he got snubbed for the 14-15 All-Star game. So you got to get him a ring as a record.
Okay. I mean, Brandon Knight, like that first year I covered the team, he was like the go-to guy, like for pretty much that whole year. Like he was forced to like have to like, carry that like 2013-14 Bucks team. And like he was like one of the go-to post-game interviews because like, you know, he usually had a good stat line. He was someone to talk to.
Yeah.
He did stuff. He spoke well. Like, you know, you could try to go to Ersan or Zaza. Sometimes they're hard to understand. Like that just comes with the territory. You know, also Ersan speaks in many cliches and he doesn't always say much. So as you're interviewing guys, you learn like, okay, who can I talk to that will say things that will be like, you know, illuminating of what's going on. And like, sometimes Ersan wasn't that guy. Though some Ersan was also sneaky funny and could very well be the last guy on the bench.
That's a good one too.
Cause again, a guy everybody likes, I think he should come back to the Bucks like every 2 years for the rest of his life. Just because.
Always has.
And
still might at this point.
Yeah, honestly.
I mean, what could go wrong? Really nothing. Real, I mean, the only thing that could go wrong is the Buck could be like, yes, Ersan's back. I can point him a ton.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think we've gotten past that.
I do too. But that's a good segue into the next question we have, which is like, if there's ever an NBA season to not be closely plugged into the Bucks, it's probably this one. A lot of players in and out of the lineup. Brooke Lopez, unfortunately, only played the one game. So I wanted to ask, just not even necessarily Bucks specific, but from a league-wide perspective, you know, have you found it a little harder to get into the NBA this year with all of the replacement players and hardship guys? You know, are you leaning more into like some other sports and maybe watching more football? They're in the playoffs right now. Seems like a lot of people, certainly in Wisconsin, probably all over are. Or have you enjoyed the league about the same as usual?
That's a great question. I am finding it a little bit harder. That's partly because of like my own distance from it. Like, you know, I wasn't a huge NBA guy before I got onto the Bucks job. It was more like, hey, I want to work in sports journalism. I want to cover teams. I want to do anything that's not baseball, because covering baseball is terrible. like it's just so long of a season. Yeah. At the best time of the year. And the days are just incredibly long. So like, my wife had given me like an ultimatum, like, you are not allowed to cover baseball. It's not allowed. And I was like, okay. So I'll do anything. I just want to get in and like see what I can do. And I grew up in Connecticut, like big college basketball state. And like, that's where a lot of like my kind of like fandom was. I grew up rooting for UConn, obviously, because that's all we got in Connecticut. My mom went there too, so that helps. But I'd kind of like, you know, slowly kind of trickled off college basketball more towards, you know, pro. But then I also covered Marquette for 3 years before I covered the Bucks full time. So kind of like got back into that world. And then I, you know, the opportunity to cover the Bucks came up and I jumped on that, and it's okay. Like, now I'm doing this. So it's like, okay. Like, I never had set out and said, I want to be like an NBA guy, or like, I am an NBA guy and I want to get onto an NBA beat. It was more of like, I just want to be a guy who covers somebody. And so I got there, and that was great. And I loved like diving into the NBA and learning the salary cap and learning how everything works, and being able to share that with other people, and getting to know the personalities, you know, on the Bucks and in the league. And it was really a great experience. But when I stopped covering the Bucks, I wasn't like, oh, like, this is like ingrained into who I am. Like, I'm an NBA guy. It was more of like, okay, now I don't have to do that. Like, I can do it when I want to. And like, there'd be games that would be on. I'd be like, since I had international league pass and I could watch anything, I was like, oh, this game's on today. Like, I definitely want to watch like this game of teams that like, are not involved, not the Bucks. Like, it's just other teams, other players who are interesting. And, or I'd see a game was like going down to the wires close with like 3 minutes left. Like, oh, I'll just pop that on. I got nothing else going on. So I got to be like kind of that like casual league pass surfer and check out. Cause when you're covering the Bucks, like, you watch all their games, you pay close attention to what they're doing. And on your day off where the Bucks aren't playing, the first thing you want to do is not like put on a different NBA game. Like, maybe you'll do that if you're on the road and you're like in a different city, hanging out at your hotel. I'll throw on like whatever game is on ESPN or TNT that night. Or it's like, hey, I never get to watch movies, so I will watch a movie tonight because I can. So yeah, so it's been harder to follow this year, I think, just because of all the churn. And also because it's like, okay, I don't have to, so I'll jump in when I'm ready. I'll dabble a little bit. But in terms of following the Bucks though, it's like, yeah, like they'll be there. They'll be around. If you want to turn that show on in April or May, it'll be there. Like there's like that certainty that in the past wasn't there. Right. I mean, they went like 18 years without making it out of the first round. And now it's just a foregone conclusion. Like, you know, they'll be there, you know, after the first round. It'll be fine.
Yeah, it's just it's a wild turnaround. And I get what you're saying. It's occasionally like the season can just be, it can be a drag. Like there's been a couple of days off for the Bucks now. It's like, I'm not concerned on a different NBA game. Like, I understand that. Like, it's it's like, why do I have to do this? I can do other things. Like, in fact, you mentioned it. I'd watched a movie that I had been waiting to watch for a while because it's like, oh, there's no Bucks game on tonight. So that sort of thing is fun. I know you, like, obviously you're not on the beat anymore, but you know, we're asking whoever
we're desperate. At this point. We're desperate here.
Do you have any sort of information on Brook Lopez?
We need to know. Okay.
No, I don't. No, I did, I'm a lurker. I see things, I know things going on. Like, I'm a lurker on the Bucks Reddit. Like, there too.
Oh boy.
So I lurk in places. It happens. Because when I was on the beat, I had to kind of be tapped in to what was going on Twitter, what was going on Instagram. Like, I deleted my Instagram. I never was an Instagram guy, but I would lurk on Instagram to see what Bucks players were putting on Instagram in case it was relevant to my life and like in my job. And so like I was able to like kind of move on, and I still have like the Bucks Reddit, like, you know, as one that I follow. And I saw like when Shams tweeted like his conversation with Brook Lopez and everybody was getting hyped about it, like, oh, he's coming back. And I was like, this is a nothing. This is a nothing interview. No one is saying anything. There's no substance behind it. Like, if I was covering team, I would say, okay, I have to acknowledge this happened. But I would also say I would be pumping the brakes incredibly hard. And like, I saw like the subreddit was going nuts, and I almost actually posted and said, like, you guys really need to pump the brakes. He said nothing. He may not be back anytime soon. But I didn't do it. I just held back, and I was like, you know what? This is not my job. You know, this is not what I have to do. I hope Brook feels well. I hope he gets back to playing shape. And it becomes available as soon as possible, because the world is better when Brook Lopez is doing what Brook Lopez is supposed to do, and he's not, you know, laid up because of surgery. So hopefully that happens. But I have absolutely no information.
We are literally analyzing, like, he'll be in a Bucks All Access for 5 seconds, and it's like a new Brolo Zapruder film every time. That's how much we miss Brook Lopez at this point. It's like, how did he look when he was moving? He looks sweaty. He's working out with the team. That's good. If I see him jump in one of these 4 second clips, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm so excited for Brook to come back.
I do not miss the days of having to be like that.
when you talked about Instagram, I figured that's how you felt about this.
Oh yeah. About, you know, there would be times, especially when like Jabari Parker was hurt with his ACL, and we were trying to figure out, you know, the second time around when he was coming back and what he was able to do, and watching, you know, sometimes you're at practice and like they're playing, you know, Jason Kidd called it church league, where it was like all the guys who didn't play and some of the video coordinators or assistant coaches, they would do stuff, you know, on a separate court, and you'd be able to watch some of it, or you'd see a snippet of it. And like before that, like, they put the curtain down or they did whatever. And it's like, oh man, like, what can we glean from this? What can we glean from that? And like, it gets to be insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, Brook, hopefully he's back sooner than later. But yeah, the Bucks are very tight-lipped with basically everything. It is intentional. It is how they run their operations. It is one of the things that came along with the new owners, because they are business people, and that is how things work in business. You try to keep your company's information, intelligence, you know, goings on out of the public sphere, because you don't want your competition to know. And when you are in the business of making millions and billions of dollars, as they are, every little thing can be seen as an advantage. And so the Bucks, that's how they operate. They are not trying to let things out. And when they do let things out, it is all incredibly well calculated. At least in terms of like a franchise, like, you know, information type situation, you know, they can't totally control players or agents or whatever, but when it's coming from them, like, it's all very calculated. And which means that they just don't let a lot out. And so eventually they will let things out when they are 100% sure he's coming back at this specific time. But until then, they're going to be quiet about it.
Do you feel like that's gotten even more aggressive as the years have gone on? Because it's like, I don't know if I'm just like getting annoyed by it now, or just like it's been a thing that's been progressively getting more and more intense. But it's like you go from, oh yeah, he has a sore back, to, oh yeah, by the way, he had back surgery. Like is this getting more and more intense as the years go on?
I don't know if it's getting more intense or they're just getting better at it. And we're getting more aware of it, or like the general public is getting more aware of it. But I think that's kind of just how they are. That's how they operate. And they found better words, you know, for, you know, after a while, Bud started using the word awareness. It's like, oh, he has like a right leg. Like, I don't want to call it an injury, but it's an awareness. And it's like,
means
oh, come
absolutely
on.
Nothing.
Oh, I know.
I know. Yeah.
I know very well. You know, they would, there were just certain ways they would phrase things. You're like, okay, I think there's more going on here, but I can't be 100% sure because no one will say anything. It's like, or like sometimes, you know, it's not a thing. Like, you know, they're doing some kind of like rest day, but they don't want to say it's rest because of league rules not allowing you to say rest. Or like, you know, so then you're like, okay, this is a game where if they're going to rest Giannis or if they're going to rest Chris, like this is the day to do it. This makes a ton of sense. And then like sometimes you're right and you're trying to press him on it and they're like, oh no, he's got a thing, like he can't do, it's like, are we sure about that? like come on, like can we just call a spade? But they can't because they don't want to get fined, they don't get in trouble. So like you have to play the game, and that's kind of how it is.
Yeah.
It's weird because like usually with like rest days, you're like, okay, if they're back the next game, it's like, yeah, okay, we understand what happened here. But it's like you get to a guy like Dante, for instance. All we heard about Dante like during the summer and early this season before he was playing, he's like, oh yeah, he's ahead of the timeline. He's way ahead of the timeline. It's like, cool, what's the timeline? You haven't said anything about what the timeline is. It's like, is he going to be back like next year? Is he going to be back tomorrow? Like, what? It just bothers me so much.
I mean, basically, you're trying to figure out if their timeline is like an MCU timeline where there's all these like splitting and it's like there's like a multiverse going on. And like okay, where is Dante in the multiverse? Can we pin this down, please? Yeah, that trying to track injuries like that, it's no fun. It's no fun at all. And like I get why the teams are quiet about things or difficult to kind of get answers out of. But as a fan or as a reporter or just as a casual observer, not fun.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, sometimes I'll see like these comments usually on Twitter or somewhere like Reddit, actually mostly Twitter, which shocker that negative comments would be on Twitter. But this like, oh, yeah. This like, oh, the Bucks don't have anyone covering the team who asks any questions and they're not holding up accountable and all this. And it's like, they say nothing. Like, yeah, I don't know what, like, are you supposed to like snoop through people's garbage and find like hack into computers? Like what are you going to do if no one says anything, including like, and I think there's this misconception too, that it's like, oh, they don't work any sources outside of press conferences. And obviously they do. They just don't say anything anywhere for the most part.
Yeah, no, that you're dead on. Like there were times where, when I was coming to the team and like people would tweet at me and like Eric name, and they'd be like, why don't you guys ask? And then I would just, I would have like the transcript of when I asked ready. And I would post it like, I asked on this day at this time and here was the answer. They're like, well, why don't you ask again? It's like, well, what, why? It's like, I can ask again. And I will ask at regular intervals, be like, okay, I have a reason to ask now. Let me just kind of keep moving on. But like, I'm not going to ask every day, like, hey, bud, what's up with Brooke? Hey, bud, are you hiding something about Brooke's injury? Hey, bud, have you been lying to us this whole time? that's not how it works. And two, like you can phrase it as well as you want. And I mean, they know, the players, the coaches, the executives, they know what you're trying to get at. And they know, like, that's sometimes like Malcolm Brogdon is really good at this, is like knowing what you wanted from your question and being like, ooh, I know what you want and I'm not going to give it to you. like Bud does that too, where he'll hear your question and he will understand the intent And he'll be like, you know, we're just trying to get better every day. And,
yeah.
You know, and just like, you know, we just want him to be healthy and on the court with us. And we'll be excited when he's able to get back. You know, he's just doing great work every day with the trainers. And, you know, he's on a good path. And he's, you know, hopefully here with us as soon as possible. But we're not going to rush him. You know, we want to be cautious with the way we bring him back and all that. You know, like, these are things you're going to hear. And you're like, but I know that you know exactly what his deal is. And I know it's like, you know, but it is not in their best interest to tell you because all they could do is either be right and give like a warning to other teams, like what's going on, or they could be wrong. And then you're mad at them because, you know, it's not always a linear progression when guys are coming back from injuries. Like, these are human bodies that have suffered some trauma that need to kind of get back in working order. And that's not always linear. So yes, we used to ask. I mean, I'm sure the people covering the team still ask and still are very tapped in and try to get that information, and people don't want to give it. And that's life on the beat.
My favorite Bud not answer ever. This was, I haven't gotten to cover the team. This was on TV. I think it was a preseason game this year. And basically he was asked like what he hopes to see. And I've said this so many times on the pod, but it's too good to not retell. Like, what do you want to see out of this game? And, you know, what are you looking forward to seeing from the guys after a long layoff or whatever? And I swear to God, he just says, I just hope we can run some 5-on-5. And it was like, but it's an NBA game. Of course, there's going to be 5-on-5. That's all that's going to happen. That's really all. It's, and then, of course, he went into, we just want to get better every day. And, you know, all the classic. It's like, since maybe it's probably the championship part, but now I'm like, it's almost endearing to me. I'm almost like, yeah, bud, say nothing. You got it.
Yeah, bud, interview random. You got it.
Oh, my goodness. There's so many just Bud isms that we could get into.
Yes. But
bring it back a little bit to the basketball side of things. Like, if you just like put away like all of like the hardship guys or the two-way guys, whatever, whoever's in and out of protocols, if the Bucks still have Giannis, Chris, Drew, Brooke Lopez, how do you feel about them running it back, going back to back?
I think they'd have every opportunity. I mean, those four guys in particular, when you have them and it's, for the past few years, been just insert whoever else, like they have the makeup and now the pedigree of a team that can win a championship. Like, it's proven to work, and it's been proven across multiple regular seasons. Now it's been proven in the playoffs, the highest stage. Like, pretty much put them against any team in the East right now. I mean, right now they're the 5 seed. They'd be against the Cavs in the first round. Do you really think the Cavs would be able to stop them 4 games out of 7? Like, you're out of your mind. Like, yes, that team is good and young and feisty and has some cool pieces. And Evan Mobley is like pretty cool in terms of like, you know, rookies and what he can do. And Jared Allen, like, you know, he's a pretty good stopper on the inside. And, you know, Garland and Sexton, like, they have these guards. Great. That's fun and nice. But like, that's not a team that's going to stop the Bucks in the playoffs. That's not a team that's going to stop the Nets in the playoffs. Like, that's not a team that I would even pick against the Sixers in the playoffs. And the Sixers are an absolute mess. But they would still have the best player in the series. And they would still maybe have the second best player in the series, depending on, well, we won't get into that.
Spicy.
Let's talk about results. But yeah, so I think the Bucks would be fine to be, yeah, in the playoffs as long as if they're fully healthy, then yes. Right now, without Brooke, I think people are now understanding how critical of a piece Brooke is. For as much, you know, kind of hate as he has gotten at times, you know, for his role or for his lack of 3-point consistency or whatever, like, he does the dirty work on defense. He is a big body who can you know, muck things up on the inside. He is a 3-point spacing threat, even if he doesn't always make them. Like, he is a critical piece to why the offense works when it works at its peak form. It's because he's there. And sometimes, you know, there have been times where even in the playoffs last year where he wasn't on the floor and they were able to get things done and do well. And that's a credit to the guys who were on the court and all of that. But Brook is an important piece. And unless they can replace him or bring him back at a high level, you know, it's going to make things more difficult in the playoffs if they don't have him. So I think that this year's, I mean, right now it's all kind of gobbledygook in the standings because of, you know, all the injuries and COVID and all that stuff. But when it all shakes out, we actually get to the playoffs, we get to see the, you know, 8 to 10 best teams kind of going at it, like in the Eastern Conference. I think there'll be some fun series, but it's hard to imagine there are very many series where the Bucks wouldn't be favored, as long as they're healthy. I mean, there's always that caveat, but I think that they have every opportunity to compete among the best teams in the East. So I'm not going to say they're going to repeat because there's just so many variables that are unknown. But, you know, they, when you have Giannis and Chris and Drew and maybe Brooke, like, you have the pieces to have a tough series against anybody.
I think people forget that Brooke Lopez, when Giannis went down in the conference finals, he was like, yeah, I'm just going to casually drop 33 points, be the leading scorer for this team and help them take a series lead. Like, people forget about that. And that happened like what? It was a while ago at this point, but like it was the last
six months ago. Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know.
I mean, yeah. And like, there's like a Rex Ryan level interest in Kevin Durant's feet, but you know, people forget like Brooke's like critical block in game, like that can't be forgotten. Like, you can't just say like, oh well, what if Kevin Durant's foot was up? Like, okay, like, well, it was on the line. What about the plays that did happen? Exactly. Like, that is also of interest. Yeah, so Brooke, I mean, he's the most important free agent this team has ever signed. I think that's probably fair to say.
Yeah, I think without a doubt. Yeah.
I haven't gone through the annals of Bucks history to look at all their free agent signings, but I think Brooke Lopez has been the most important one of all of them, and it's both crazy and not crazy that's not an overstatement.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at, the Bucks have had so much trouble signing guys for so long that they didn't trade for first, right? So I remember at the time, like, Greg Monroe was the biggest by far,
and it was huge.
Yeah,
if you weren't around then, that was a big deal.
Oh my God,
that was huge.
Yeah,
I remember seeing that news, and I was like, wait, what? Wait, Greg Monroe signed with the Bucks?
Over the Knicks and the Lakers?
Yeah, I was like, I thought he was going to the Knicks that summer. I was just oh my goodness. I thought they were like a LeBron ankle tweak away from a finals run. That did not work out at all. but it was just like, Greg Monroe was the biggest at the time, but if you're talking about most impact, it's got to be Brooke.
It's Brooke. It's definitely Brooke. Yeah.
Easy. I had like a brief like mind fog where I was like, wait, did Oscar Robertson, he got traded to Milwaukee, right? He got traded to Milwaukee. I just looked up, he did get traded to Milwaukee. He's not afraid. So I was like, okay, cool. Like, totally, like, that's the only other person I could have possibly thought might have been, but yeah, Brooke Lopez.
Yeah. Is his jersey going up in the Raptors? We say yes.
It is in Brooklyn. And I think that it very well, I mean, it depends how Raptor happy, like, the Bucks ownership is, like, after all these guys retire. Like, we know Giannis's jersey's going to the Raptors. Like, just put it there now. Like, what are we doing? Chris is too. Like,
yep, agreed.
Done deal. It's over. After that, I don't know. I don't want to like definitively say yes or no to anybody. I mean, Drew's been around for a year plus. I don't know if there's too much precedent for that, but hey, I mean, put that steel in the Raptors. Just like a picture of him ripping it from Booker. Like, put that in the Raptors. I think Brooke is, I want to say like 80% of the way there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it's all the way, but like, again, it depends how Raptor happy they are. How many numbers do they want to retire? Like, that's really where we're at.
The real question is Pat getting his jersey in the Raptors?
I'm on board with this. That was Ty's thing
during the playoffs. It's like, Pat's, he's so integral to this team. During the Brooklyn series, like, he's the one guy off the bench they could actually play. And it's just like, they don't win that title without Pat Connaughton. So Ty's been on the Pat Connaughton for the Raptors.
I don't know what Pat wants to do with his life other than run his construction business and build homes and develop and all that stuff. But could he, this is me thinking off the top of my head, could he ultimately like replace Marcus Johnson as the Bucks play-by-play guy?
Oh wow.
Like could that be his path? Could that be his path?
I was actually thinking he's going to just keep making business moves, buy some share of the Bucks, and just retire his own number.
That's a power play. Yeah, that is the like the you know the galaxy brain move, right? it's like buy the team, retire my number. Like I don't know if he wants to go back to Boston or hang out near Notre Dame or where he wants to be and what he wants to do. But like he can talk. the guy, you know. Sometimes I'd be like, Pat, stop talking. Like, Pat, I asked you one question 4 minutes ago. I got the answer. You could put him on TV. He could do play-by-play. He could have fun with that. Marcus Johnson, I'm saying replace him in like 10, 15 years. Marcus, yeah. Keep doing your thing.
Yeah,
like you're crushing it. We need you around like for basically ever. Just stay around. But whenever you are ready to go hang out and do something else and, you know, dunk on your 95th birthday, like that's fine. Like, go do that, but maybe Pat Connaughton will, you know, maybe he'll back you up. I don't know. Just spitballing here.
That's a great,
that's fun.
That's really interesting. That's really fun, actually. He would be great at doing color on the broadcast, honestly. Like, they should try doing that, like, now if he's missing a game or two. They've done that in the past with other players, right? Like, they've had Klay Thompson on the Warriors before. Like, they've had, like, CJ when he's been injured in the past that he's been on the Blazers broadcast. They should try Pat on the Bucks broadcast.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I interned at the Pacers, they had wrapped up, I think, like the one seed or whatever. And it was the last game of the regular season. They're playing Philly, who at the time was processing.
Yeah.
Or close to processing. They're in the process vicinity. And no one cared. It's the last game of the season. Like all the starters were sitting out. And I remember like Roy Hibbert and like Paul George, they were like all sitting at the TV desk like during the game. I think they like did a quarter or they did some interviews like during the game. Yeah. So that was kind of interesting.
I was going to guess Roy Hibbert.
Yeah.
I was going to guess Hibbert would be one of the guys on TV. Hibbert seems also like a pretty good talker.
Yeah. Yeah. He was frustrating when I was an intern for the Pacers because one of my jobs was to, you know, bring the camera into the locker room and like record post game interviews and sometimes even do the interviews while recording. And Roy was not interested or able in sitting still. Like, so he would not sit still. Like you'd be interviewing like, hey, Roy, can we talk? And he'd be like, yes, let's talk. And I would start recording and then he'd be like looking in his locker and trying to get shoes and he'd be doing kind of stuff. Like, it's like, Roy, can you just stay? I can't put this on. I am pacers.com. Like I'm for you. like, can you just like, let me get a good video of you? But I do remember because I was a UConn fan, I remember watching a game where Georgetown played UConn and out of nowhere, Roy Hibbert hit a three and I was like, this is insane. And there was a game with the Pacers where he hit a three and I knew that I looked it up. I'm like, oh, he was 3 for 3 on threes in college. And I was like, Roy, like, you know, I remember you hitting a big three against UConn. You hit a bunch of threes in college. Like, have you been hiding that part of your game for now? He's like, people don't know. I'm the greatest 3-point shooter in college basketball history. he's like, look it up. No one's better than me.
That's amazing.
And I was like, totally right. So yeah, Roy Hibbert, Bucks legend. I don't even know how we got here, but we're here.
Exactly. The mark of a good podcast.
Yes.
It's usually how the Euro stuff goes. Yeah. Ty, do we have any last minute questions here? Or should we
I think we've stolen enough of Matt's time for now. Although I suddenly have, again, a strong desire to get Pat Connaughton on the podcast. We've tried before, but now hearing that he could be the next potentially color commentator, we need to make that happen at some point. That's what I know now. And a lot more fun stuff about the Bucks, but especially about Pat.
I totally could see it. I mean, again, that was just me pulling random thoughts out of my head, but I could see it happening.
Yeah, for sure. It would be a very fun time, I'll say that. Matt, do you have anything before we let you go? Do you have anything specific that you would like to highlight that you want people to check out?
No, I mean, other than definitely check out Bleacher Report, the Bleacher Report app. It's my new home, my new work home. I've loved it at Bleacher Report. People are really great. A lot of good products coming out in terms of engagement, and actually they have like merch and videos and all kinds of stuff at Bleacher Report. So check it out, good stuff. I I edit a lot of the stories, or a decent number of the stories that are there. So, you know, I hope that would mean that they're well edited. But, you know, we try to do my best. So, yeah, check out Bleach Report, Bleach Report app. You won't see my name probably anywhere over there, but that's okay. You know, need those kind of background supporters too.
For sure, for sure. Quality editor and a quality editor. I don't know. Worked well in my head. let's move on. But no, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. It's been our pleasure having you on. Just talking Bucks stories, journalism, everything. This has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you for coming on. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I had a great time hanging out with you guys. So yeah, hopefully Bucks fans enjoy our conversation as much as I did.